It's time for Hogue Health Radio, brought to you by Hogue Memorial Hospital Presbyterian, Orange County's top hospital. And now, here's Deborah Howell.
Cheers, everybody. Welcome back to the show. So glad you could spare a few minutes to spend with us. On the show today, I have the pleasure of Dr. Jonathan Wheeler on the program. Dr. Wheeler has served as the chairman and vice chairman of the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Hogue Hospital and is committed to advancing techniques and employed in the area of women's obstetric and gynecological services. Welcome, Dr. Wheeler.
Thank you for having me on the show.
We do appreciate your taking time to be on the show. So many women face the possibility and the inevitability of having a hysterectomy at some point. First of all, let's get a definition. What exactly is a hysterectomy?
A hysterectomy is basically the removal of the uterus. Unfortunately, a lot of patients get confused with the terminology out there, and they refer to partials, and they're confused as to whether that's ovaries or cervix or not.
Right.
But the technical answer is that a hysterectomy is removal of the uterus. Subtotal removes just the uterus, total removes the cervix, and there's no real definition of partial. Now, many people confuse something called a bilateral salpingo-oophorectomy, or BSO, as a total. But keep in mind that the ovaries are embryologically and vascularly separate from the uterus. They just attach at about 7 weeks in the embryo.
Interesting.
And they're just tethered there so they can donate eggs to the uterus. But they are completely separate from the uterus, and the need to remove ovaries at the time of hysterectomy is becoming less and less influenced in the hysterectomy. Traditionally, we used to take them out women in their 40s, but today we're leaving the ovaries in until women in their 50s, unless there's a medical need, either because of a predisposition to cancer of the ovaries, breast, or some disease of the ovaries at the time of surgery.
And what happens to those tethers? Where do they go?
Well, the tethers are basically ligaments that hold the ovaries to the side of the uterus, which we just cut. Mm-hmm. But the actual infundibulopelvic ligament, which supplies blood to the ovaries, actually comes from the kidneys and the renal veins and arteries.
Interesting.
So the ovaries will continue functioning in their own manner without any significant detriment after a hysterectomy if you don't touch them or if you leave them alone.
Fantastic. So thus, there goes the worry about, you know, quote-unquote, drying up after a hysterectomy. It's not the case.
I think, unfortunately, for years, people had this 1970s notion that if you have a hysterectomy, you're going to grow old overnight, gain weight, lose your sexual function. All these things are misnomers. Today's hysterectomy, especially the minimally invasive surgeries, really try to preserve ovarian function so that women, really, the only difference they'll notice afterwards is hopefully the problem that caused the hysterectomy is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, they're going to go back to being normal without the periods.
Right. It's a beautiful day for many, many women. And the scarring is so, so tiny. I mean, less than an inch in length, correct?
Well, if we're doing the minimally invasive, you have to remember that 70 to 80% of hysterectomies are still done by old-fashioned bikini cuts, which goes back 20 to 30 years. Since I left UCLA in 1990, it's been my mission and the mission of a lot of like-minded colleagues at Hogue that we really wanted to inverse that number, and we wanted to do 70 to 80% of our hysterectomies laparoscopically or minimally invasively. And we've been working very hard for the last 20 years and actually have some of the best numbers in Southern California, if not the United States, in doing minimally invasive hysterectomies.
Unbelievable. That is such a happy day for so many women. But still, why do so many women in this day and age wish to have alternative procedures to hysterectomy? Is it that stigma?
Well, I think it's partly the stigma. There's still a lot of old-fashioned, a lot of, you know, information that women get about this is, you know, passed on from person to person. It's anecdotal. The data really doesn't support it, but unfortunately it's very hard to get the word out to patients. But I think, you know, the other beauty of this is that there's a lot of patients who really don't need hysterectomy, and they come in for, you know, bleeding or small polyps or small fibroids in the uterus that can be treated with other minimally invasive procedures, such as hysteroscopy or endometrial ablation.
That was my next question. What are the alternatives to traditional hysterectomy?
Well, the decision to do a hysterectomy is based, first of all, on the patient's age, her reproductive desires, and basically if the disease that she's experiencing, whether it's fibroids or endometriosis, is global or if it's focal.
Mm-hmm.
So if a person's problem is just bleeding and the problem is located just in the lining of the uterus called the endometrium, then hysteroscopic surgeries usually will take care of that.
Okay.
If she has fibroids that are slightly larger, but she wants to maintain her reproductive capacity or wants to avoid hysterectomy, then there are ways to do what they call myomectomies, where we just remove the fibroid tumors from the uterus.
Okay.
Now, traditionally, those were all done through exploratory procedures with longer hospitalizations and up to 4 to 6 week recoveries. But today, with the new robots and the laparoscopic techniques that we're doing, I'm able to send my patients home from the recovery room, and they can be back to work within a week after they've had fibroid tumors removed from their uterus, not the old 4 to 6 weeks at home with a big incision on their belly.
Right. That's a huge leap of progress. Now, of course, everybody wants to know the risks and the benefits.
Well, the risks of all surgeries depend on what the surgery that is being done and the risks of the patient. If women who have had numerous abdominal surgeries, you really want to make sure that their dissections are good and that they're not going to end up with postoperative adhesions or problems with their bowels or bladder afterwards. So I think a good history ahead of time is very important.
Okay.
But I think going in with minimally invasive procedures allows you better dissection and better visualization of the scar tissue that might be in there. But the risks are the risks of any surgery, the anesthetic risks, the risks of bleeding. The beauty of minimally invasive surgery is statistics show that the blood loss associated with minimally invasive, and even and robotic is the best, is significantly reduced over traditional open procedures.
The Hoag Gynecological Robotic Surgery Program is one of the best in the nation. I'd love to hear what is so special about it.
Well, first of all, we have the largest numbers for female gynecologic surgery. It just took us a couple of years to wake up and realize that we were way ahead of the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
We've had robots in our hospital for almost 5 years now, and we currently have 4 full-time robots in our hospital, whereas most hospitals are just buying their first one today. We are finally putting together, and we've been working for about a year on putting a robotics program together that will include a nurse navigator who will be a seamless transition for the patient and will walk them from the start to the end of their surgery so that there's no questions and that they can pretty much be put through the process without a lot of the inconsistencies in some other surgical suites.
Mm-hmm.
More importantly, we've got 7 very dedicated minimally invasive surgeons who have been doing these for at least a year, if not up to 5 years since the invention of the robot, and have a lot of experience in this that are doing a very, very good job. Most of our patients are going home within 24 hours, with at least half of them going home the day of their surgery, and almost all of them are back to work within 7 days.
How long would a typical training period be for a doctor to learn a new robot?
Well, the training of the robot is really based on the patient, the doctor's technical expertise.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to be a good laparoscopic surgeon to begin with, and then it's probably a good 6 months of doing cases to really get the finesse down of the robot. The robot really affords, above traditional laparoscopy, what the robot affords is endo-wrist technology and three-dimensional imaging. And by doing this, you get better magnification, better depth of field, and finally, the surgical dissections that you do are much cleaner and finer because the articulating joints at the end of the robotic arms allow you to be able to use kind of the wrists that you lose when you do traditional laparoscopy.
Unbelievable. It's such a brave new world. I mean, 10 years ago, could you even envision 5 robots and 7 surgeons working together and getting women out of the hospital often in 24 hours and back on their feet?
Well, it's been our goal. I mean, when we moved up to laparoscopic assisted vaginal hysterectomies and then total laparoscopic hysterectomies over the last 2 decades, we saw the benefits of minimally invasive surgery. I think the robot is just basically laparoscopy on steroids. It pushes us to the new dimension. I foresee a day and age where all hospitals, many of the operating rooms, will just have robots built into the operating rooms. But we're getting there.
Definitely getting there. I wanted to give a resource for women who are listening now who may have questions. I'm going to send them to hoaghospital.org, and then shall they enter keyword MIS?
Yeah, the Minimally Invasive Surgery Program will have their own website and a navigator that will contact them through either Minimally Invasive Surgery or the MIS keyword.
Fantastic. And do you have your own website, Doctor?
I do. It's jonathanwheelermd.com. And in that website, they'll get access to Intuitive Surgical's Da Vinci website, as well as some of the other minimally invasive procedures we do.
fantastic. Okay, and also, if you missed part of this and you wanted to hear the whole show that we have just done, it's very easy to listen to a podcast anytime you like or share it with a friend. It's really important free information you can carry with you on your iPhone or your MP3 player. Just download the podcast onto your personal player and listen whenever you like. Dr. Wheeler, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Well, thank you for having me.
We've learned a tremendous amount about hysterectomies and alternative treatment options, infertility, the whole nine. We thank Dr. Wheeler once again. This is Deborah Howell for Hoge Health Radio. We want to thank you so much for listening and being a part of the show today. Have yourself a wonderful afternoon.